direct debate and direct critical systemic critical thinking. So to work ourselves out from the problem of prohibition requires systemic critical thinking, and not just sloppy piecemeal critical thinking, but systemic critical thinking, including the nature of religion, a whole alternative worldview. Don't judge the ego death theory by the received criteria within one domain at a time, because the received criteria are designed to be modeled and to be self-preserving. Judge the ego death theory within each field by its own criteria. Be hypersensitive about what criteria of evaluation you're using and what assumption set you're more or less consciously adopting within each of the related fields. There are some 20 interlocked, or at least 10, but I feel better to say 20. Myth, religion, ahistoricity, drugs, role of drugs in religious history, the criteria by which any religious meditative practice ought to be and needs to be judged, self-control cybernetics, heroic lyrics, and mystery religions, New Testament Christianity, and the interpretation of it, and explanation of Christian origins, Roman religion, Hellenistic religion. These are all fields, these are all domains. Free will versus determinism, cognitive phenomenology, and theobotany, the ego death theory, is not one narrow, rigid explanation so much as a paradigm, a flexible, broad paradigm. To discuss non-duality or to discuss no free will or transcending determinism is not to say that it's central, that idea equals the core, but rather that idea is effective. Its effectiveness as a short lightning path is what makes free will so interesting towards the goal of understanding non-duality. But really what makes no free will interesting is really more not the issue of free will, but the issue of the more central point, which is our control agency power and the problematizing of it in relation to the greater ground that gives rise to the in some sense separate controller agent. In the correct approach to what some would call drug policy reform, the correct approach involves taking 10 steps backwards and saying step one is to come up with a whole different way of thinking. First of all, come up with an alternative, complete, self-contained, non-parasitical, independent, systemic, critical thinking about drugs and motives and what's going on and the potentials and how they've been used in history. Supposing that you become committed to speaking the truth about the insincerity of the prohibitionists and their self-serving motives of the prohibition gravy train, and you're educated about the ego death theory, you're educated about the ego death theory and its various ramifications and its central focus on the nullity of personal control power in the mystic altered state, and how that situation has been played out and described in terms of free will, no free will, the serpent, non-duality, and the flying feathered serpent. The winged serpent, frozen space-time, as seen in the dissociative state, that's the flying serpent. That's the winged snake. What are the vulnerabilities of the Wasson-Allegro-McKenna theories of the origin of religion? The vulnerabilities of the Wasson-Allegro-McKenna theories. The Wasson-Allegro-McKenna theories are, they only look at mushroom evidence, and they don't look at most of the mushroom evidence, and they don't look at cognitive phenomenology, per Benny Shannon, as a source of evidence and theory confirmation. None of those theories, they're all bad theories, bad variants of the same bad theory, because none of the theorists thought to even ask the question or consider the question of what was the statistical occurrence of drug use as understood, drug use that was understood to be the legitimate Eucharist. Not a legitimate Eucharist, but the legitimate Eucharist. I'm an efficiency-minded, regarding such nonsense as shaman's ability to heal, and nonsense, mystic nonsense, religious nonsense, I'm a hard-headed atheist, rational, René Descartes, critical modern thinker. Like all good acid rock, hardcore, hardened, battle-hardened metalheads, they're not going to put up with wimpy nonsense. Headbangers, metalheads, Metallica. If you want critical, hardcore thinking mixed with aggressive investigation of the mystic dissociative state, look to Metallica and the problems that they report, the problematizing of control that they report. Why look at it? Why not look at peace and light meditation practices? Look at Metallica and their response to the dissociative state, because they're showing how a René Descartes would, how a practical, hard-headed, warrior-like, critical, no-nonsense thinker who has no time for any of the nonsense, how that person is grappling with the problematization of control is by definition then going to be the short lightning path, ride the lightning. Now, if some meditation practice lacks that ability to problematize control, then it's not a, then it's a religious practice is only potent. It's potent. A religious practice is potent to the extent that it can. That's a great one. A religious practice is potent to the extent that it can problematize personal control. That is the judgment criteria put forth by the cybernetic theory of ego transcendence on how to judge the efficacy and legitimacy of a religious practice. It needs to urgently, experientially, dynamically problematize control in a very practical, hard-headed, military kind of way, of someone who has no time to play silly spirituality games. If conventional meditation only has a poor ability to problematize control, then I would say it's a wimpy, watered-down ersatz version of, it's a third-rate hand-me-down version of that religion. It's lost touch, basically, with its roots and has gotten lost in irrelevancies, things that aren't really religion proper, like mundane conduct of life, mundane moralism, for example, or the sort of, it's sort of the Eastern version of fundamentalism and the fundamentalist nonsense and escapism. There's sort of an Eastern equivalent of such silly escapism, the peace and light kind of glossy, hazy version of spirituality that it tries to shut out all aspects of spirituality that are involved in problematizing of control. They want to have, so the effeminate, impotent version of meditation is that which has lost the capability of problematizing control. Is religion about physical healing? No, religion is first of all about closing the gap or establishing the relationship, truly establishing the relationship between the local locus of control, that's you, and the ground of being that gives rise to that and is out of the control of that. Does the local locus of control control the ground of being? If anything, of course, it's the ground of being that controls the local locus of control. From the point of view of the local locus of control, its control is given to it by the ground of being, and is thus power is sort of taken away from the local locus of control in the dissociative state when one can think clearly about these things, or when one vividly perceives these relationships and situations, situatedness of the individual person. Physical healing is not important from the point of view of cognitive phenomenology. Healing the relation between the separate controller self, that's you, and the whole, the ground of being, and that which gives rise to the individual person, that needs to be healed. That's the relevant, important, main driving kind of healing that's relevant, that's the source of religion. Drug policy reform is conceptually brainwashed. I guess I'm leaping over saying some of the simple things that seem too obvious to bother stating, which is that drug policy reform fails to look at the money, fails to follow the money, and fails to call the bluff on that it's all, prohibition is a giant insincere gravy train. That's all it is. That's all it's ever been from top to bottom. And but the way that people are permitted, the way that the system, the establishment, the way that the establishment or the massive received Uber view, the Uber world model, the Uber world view, the official world view, the received world view, and I do like official, the official world view or Uber world view, the official Uber world view permits only a certain kind of discussion of drug policy reform. It encourages and it suppresses examples of the contrary, and it encourages people to only discuss drug policy reform in ways that actually sustain and maintain the status quo. We've got to have revolutionary drug policy reform, not status quo drug policy reform attempts, which only are a part of the problem and cause the very problem. It's sort of like official rebellion. If people want to rebel against the official culture, so the official culture protects itself by fabricating an official form of rebellion that is designed to be neutered and designed to actually end up instead feeding back and feeding into the mainstream, the official view, the official worldview, the official Uber worldview, the official Uber worldview. It's not a simple monolithic thing. It's rather a set of confusions and entrenched debates going across some 20 fields. Part of the Uber worldview, part of the official Uber worldview is its conception of what are the relation and distinctive separateness among these 20 relevant fields. The very notion that ahistoricity of Jesus is not very important or is a separate topic, that very assumption, that feeling and consensus that the ahistoricity of Jesus is a separate topic, that opinion right there is part of the official Uber worldview, the establishment paradigm, or the establishment, which is anti-God. Of course it's anti-God. Of course it's anti-enlightenment. And the establishment paradigm will, of course, encourage versions of religion that are neutered, that are effectively neutered. So how can you go about creating, how can you as an advocate of the establishment view go about creating a version of religious practice that's neutered? Well, have it disparage and minimize diminishing. We should not be so interested in individual isolated domains as we should be interested in whole systems of domains and the establishment Uber view. So you can't really have any efforts to have drug policy reform are going to be futile, because that's going to be approached and condoned by the establishment worldview, by the establishment Uber worldview, as an isolated topic that's going to deliberately leave all sorts of assumptions in place left and right all over, as against true systemic critical thinking, which inherently runs across fields as necessary and as relevant. Value. The practice of meditating has potentially multiple values, multiple things of value that it can contribute. The real issue is, to what extent does the practice of meditating provide a specific thing of value? That specific thing of value is the experiential dynamics of problematizing personal control power with relationship to the ground of being that gives rise to the individual control person, controller person. There are various aspects, points of drug policy reform that are brainwashed. For example, it fails to point out the phony motives, the phony reasoning, the endless delaying tactics that go on forever of saying, oh, more research is needed. The failure to point out that those are delaying tactics. I mean, people should be screaming, quit the delaying tactics, quit the delaying tactics, quit pretending, enough with the excuses, pretense, and lies. You're a liar. Quit lying to us. You're lying to us. You're a liar. You are a liar. I'm calling you on it. Quit avoiding the truth here and quit pretending to believe things that you don't actually believe. You pretend to believe that cannabis, you don't in fact. The truth is that you, yourself, you prohibitionist leader, you do not believe that cannabis is harmful, but you're pretending to believe it. And why are you doing that? For your own selfish, amoral, evil self-interest. You're doing it because you can, because they pay you to do it, because you get paid, you make money by lying and pretending to consider cannabis harmful when you in fact believe that cannabis is not harmful. That is the real sore point of hypocrisy. That's the true kind of hypocrisy, is trying to get other people to believe something that you don't believe yourself. You're trying to manipulate the shallow consensus view in such a way that it profits you financially, while you don't believe, when you very much disbelieve and don't believe the very view that you're trying to get other people to buy into, to give you their money in ways that they would never give you their money in if you were honest about your real beliefs. So instead, the discussions of drug policy reform are really lame and effeminate and and self-defeating and servile or submissive. So what, I guess probably the real question here is, what should pro-justice activists focus their efforts on doing to be most effective? Well, step one is to state the truth about drugs, and state the truth, very importantly, about the motivation, the insincerity of motivations of the drug prohibitionist leaders. That's step one. There can be no step one except that, to state what's really going on and be very crystal clear on it. And you've got to welcome the other reformers into the movement by setting them straight on what's really going on here, that the prohibitionist leaders disbelieve their own propaganda, that their propaganda is motivated by purely self-interest financial reasons. So the first step in reform, well, and it has to be a settling point. We have to make up our minds on what our real objective is. Getting rid of all the drug schedules, throwing them out entirely, Nixon's drug schedules, and never allowing any kind of replacement of those. Fully abolish drug prohibition, release the prisoners, even some of the violent ones whose violence really is nothing but was nothing but a product of prohibition and the conditions of prohibition. And we would give back the confiscated forfeiture, return all that, disband all the profit-driven entities, disband the drug testing companies, the prisons, that whole industry, the prohibition industry, the prohibition for profit industry, disband all of them, release the prisoners. So we've got to get clear on those goals. So sort of step one has to be state the truth. Step two has to be something like get clear on the goals. Step one, state what is, write down what is the case, including, very importantly, motives of the prohibitionist hypocrites and deceivers, the pretenders, phony posturers who are driven by self-serving profit, and they don't believe a word they say. They spin to benefit and profit themselves. So step one, write down what is actually the case. Step two is establish the goals clearly. And one of those goals is a commitment to not buying into the received establishment uber worldview. Stop demonizing any and all drugs. Don't say that we should legalize entheogens because they're not a horrible evil drug like heroin is. Nope, you don't do that. Don't do that. The problem is the schedules. The problem is prohibitionism, period. Quit prohibition. Abolish drug prohibition entirely and throw away all the schedules. Even the ideas of public health, we're only going to chop off one arm instead of two now, see how progressive we are, is compromise. Now, compromise can either be progress or compromise can be a part of the problem. Because as long as you get the compromise, then the problem wanes and drops below the threshold of forcing a transformation. Which would we rather have? Slightly less intense prohibition, which seems to ramp up anyway, or waiting and holding out? Which would you rather have? A nominal de-intensifying of prohibition that never actually does de-intensify, that's continued forever? That's the direction, that's the result of today's drug policy reform thinking. It buys into, it condones and permits and lets pass. It lets pass without comment far too much. Basically the entirety of the received uber worldview. Like the senator saying, drug use is a mistake, the cannabis is a mistake. No, to say it's a mistake right away, that's the problem. That's what's causing the problem, is to say that cannabis smoking is a mistake. Quit saying that. So quit telling lies. So step one is write the truth. Step two is get clear on the goals. And step three is sort of a strategic step of regarding strategy, which is to quit telling lies. Quit condoning and repeating and encouraging and condoning and allowing and then in effect building up the lies of the prohibitionist forked tongue leaders who don't believe a word of their own propaganda, who don't believe a word of their own self-serving vested interest propaganda. In the U.S., I'd recommend giving to the ACLU rather than the drug policy organizations, because the ACLU understands the principles. It's a more principled. The ACLU understands the principles of liberty, and the ACLU does not go about their business by telling lies and condoning the distortions and self-serving spin of the established received view. You could do worse. It recommended to donate to ACLU, support the ACLU. They have much of a cleaner and less compromised part of the problem, an accomplice. The drug policy reformers permit themselves to become accomplices in prohibition in many ways, and they're tricked into doing that. The establishment uber worldview coerces drug policy reformers into neutered versions of the drug policy reform. It says, well, we won't permit you to publish this idea, but we'll permit you to publish this other idea. So go ahead and go for that. Go for it on that other neutered pseudo-rebellion there. You can say that all you want, but you can't say anything that actually threatens our worldview. Say things that disrupt and threaten. Say things that forcefully disrupt the received view, the established official uber worldview. Contradict the established received view and value system at its heart. Value system and system of judging. It's all, so much of this comes down to a gigantic, massive scale system of judging. Judging criteria. Paradigms have everything to do with sets of judgment criteria. Come along with a different and apply and define a different set of judgment criteria that's independent and systemically critical, independent expression for the true system of criteria for judging drug use and the role of drugs in society. Go about it in an independent thinker way. Don't begin from within the paradigm of the prohibitionists and that value system and that system of judgments. Stop using the system of judgments that are defined by the prohibitionists as a strategy for drug policy reform. Approach it in a more radical, more disruptive approach, which is to apply a whole different system of judgment and a system of judging the motivations, the true motivations, and revealing those. Call their bluff. Expose the motivations, expose the phony motivations of the pretenders that are the drug prohibitionist leaders and the riders, the many riders of the drug war gravy train. Establish a system of judging and critiquing the drug war gravy train. Follow the money. Be very committed to, first of all, to following the money. That's a part of writing the truth of what is in fact the case. And when writing about the motives and what is the case about the motives of the prohibitionists, follow the money. When you write what is the case, be sure to write especially very much the follow the money analysis. Who is profiting from pretending to think that cannabis is harmful when those very people don't in fact think they believe that cannabis is not harmful? But what causes those people to pretend that they think that cannabis is harmful? What is the money self-interest going on there? And how are they then, how do they go about then, how does the establishment uber worldview go about its business of manufacturing a superficial, shallow, fuzzy-minded popular consensus or pseudo-consensus about a big part of that pseudo-manufactured consensus is systems of judgment criteria. That really is a major part of the problem, is that drug policy reformers let themselves get coerced and tricked into applying sets of judgment criteria, and they're limited to these very limited set of judgment criteria until they're only left with a few ruts of thinking that they're permitted to adhere to. And these are all, of course, ruts that have been passed and accepted by the consensus reality view and neutered. So you need to bring in different judgment criteria sets and be very committed to an independent value system and system of judgments and an independent analysis of the entire situation. And be sure never to buy in, never condone any points of the establishment view. Be sure to contradict and disrupt the establishment view at every point, at every value, every value they hold, all the ways of thinking. Be sure to disrupt every aspect of the received view. Learn to recognize that neutered kind of reform, that's the kind that's condoned by the establishment view, pseudo-rebellion and pseudo-reform. Be very sensitive to those, to the kind of reform that's permitted to be discussed by the establishment, the kind of reform that the prohibitionists like so much because it enables the situation to go on forever. just like Satan's favorite version of meditation is the kind that is incapable of problematizing personal control. Satan hates the lightning path. Anti-religious religion is religion which is designed to delay and push off as much as possible the problematization of personal control. The problematization of personal control, which is the heart of religion. The problematization of personal control in light of the grounded being that gives rise to the person. And really, would I say that without the problematizing of control, there is no religion? I would say that for all practical purposes, mystic experiencing is the problematization of control. The heart and essence and most recognizable, most distinctively recognizable essential thing is the problematizing of control. Now you might say, well, it's really just a matter of reconfiguring of control. I'm saying that in practice, the reconfiguration is not going to happen except as a result of problematizing of control. Certainly it's a reconfiguration of control from the point of view, and I'd emphasize this, not from an armchair abstract point of view, but from a dynamic, fully engaged point of view of the grappling with some of the terrifying ramifications, the wrathful deities, some of the terrifying ramifications of one's own personal relationship. Now you might say, well, I'd rather have religion without those, thank you. But then you haven't explored the dynamics of the thing. You haven't grappled with the thing until you've encountered the problematizing. That's why the problematizing of control is the ultimate criteria or test signature. It's really the signature of the experience. Like, you can never be sure that there was actually religious experience there until personal control is problematized. Now, as soon as personal control is problematized, you know there is real religion going on there. The hallmark of legitimate religion is the problematizing of personal control. We can never trust and be sure that there's actual religious experience going on until there's the problematization of control. The personal control power. The problematization of personal control power. Of your personal control power now in this state relative to your thoughts 5 minutes from now. Because problematizing personal control has a lot to do with time, especially the near future. What's the best way to most quickly and most intensely problematize personal control power is to think about the thoughts, what thoughts you're going to be thinking 5 minutes from now, and what's the origin and source of those thoughts, and how can you trust that origin and source of the thoughts. Thus, that's really where the whole time concern and free will concern comes in. It's when you talk about problematizing of personal control power, what are some of the main dynamics and cognitive phenomenology dynamics involved there in the problematization of personal control power? The feeling that how is personal control going to be most effectively, most intensely, and directly and ergonomically encountered is to encounter it by thinking in terms of time as a space-like dimension and other things like the no free will idea. It's a useful... Why no free will is such a hallmark of religion because it's so useful to problematize personal control power and to think about and to work through the ramifications of personal control power. Meditation is legitimate insofar as it, to the degree and extent to which it enables you to grapple with all the various dynamics of personal control power in relation to the whole. So drug-free meditation there it's a slow, cold, ineffective method, so then it's a matter of degree that kind of meditation is potent to the degree that it has the capability of problematizing control and experientially exploring all the dynamics of personal control power in relation to the whole ground of being that gives rise to the individual person. Controller person. There's so much to say on different levels of the questions here. There's a lot to say in the meta theory arena, and there's a lot to say to have sort of bullet points in the presumably isolated questions. The future for the development of the ego-death theory. Well, first of all, we need other people to come on board. First of all, people need to talk about the main article, the main ego-death theory article. People, meaning scholars and practitioners and investigators and researchers across some 20 domains. Reformed theology, entheogens, historicity of Jesus, Pauline studies, meditation, the standards of criteria by which we judge the efficacy of meditation versions, interpretation of myth, ancient mystery religion, Western esotericism, philosophy of free will and determinism, tenseless time, time as a space-like dimension, quantum mechanics, relativity, Minkowski space-time diagrams, computer science, the issue of free will, and Hofstadter, Douglas Hofstadter, and Marvin Minsky in the field of computer science, and their issues that they're driven by, I Am a Strange Loop by Hofstadter. All those scholars and thinkers, the future of the development of the ego death theory requires that. Drug policy reformers need to understand entheogen scholarship. They need to understand the limitations of Wasson Allegra McKenna and the limitations, therefore, of Letcher. They need to read the issues of Entheos magazine, and they need to read Heinrich's book and that whole body of literature. There's not much. It's a pile that's not very large, certainly not overwhelmingly large pile to learn about pretty much all the evidence. I mean, you could really say I've read everything about entheogen scholarship. That's a doable thing. To read all the research on entheogen scholarship, you could do that. That would not take an inordinate amount of time or work. What is my take on McKenna's idea of the stoned ape? What is the relevance of the ahistoricity of Jesus to the ego death theory? How do I envision the future for the development of the ego death theory? I've done my time in critiquing other scholars' views. It's time for scholars now to comment on the main ego death theory article. Ego death theory article. I'm in my phase three. My phase one was defining the core theory in terms of personal self-control, cybernetics, and self-management. Part two, phase two of mine was explaining religious myth and the entheogen history and ahistoricity of Jesus and Paul and the true Christian origins as a counter to Roman sociopolitical doctrine that was tangled up and utilized the mystic state. I mean that the Roman Empire propaganda used the mystic state, utilized it to prop up the Roman Empire's sociopolitical system, and that Christianity was offered as an alternative way of applying the plant-induced altered state towards an alternative sociopolitical configuration, which was successful, except that the same old ruling class leaders were left in charge of Christianity, just as they had been in the Roman system. And it, again, here's an example. Christianity provides an example of how rebellion is at first a threat to the established order, but then is modified and neutered to fit into the established, the ruling establishment. The idea of making a religion centered around the figure of rebellion, because the cross was a symbol of rebelling against the Roman order. And so some people cleverly said, hey, let's make a religion out of worshiping a guy who represents rebelling against the worldly order. Let's invert the values and make a religion out of that. And that was successful, popular, took off. And then the establishment realized, like Eusebius and Constantine, realized that they could make a viable religion by actually incorporating the very theme of rebellion, incorporating the counter theme into the official religion, thus co-opting rebellion into the status quo system. Same thing happens in drug policy reform. The status quo defends itself and defends its investments by co-opting and providing an ersatz co-opted version, an insidious simulation of drug policy reform that specifically is that which is neutered so that it doesn't actually threaten the status quo. Drug policy reformers need to be very actively living in an alternate worldview. Live in Zion, sort of, so to speak. Quit living in the Matrix and expressing yourself in the language of the Matrix. Instead, live in Zion and express yourself in that format. Develop an articulate and independent, highly refined alternate system, which is what the ego death theory provides. But it needs further contributions from other people. I'm doing everybody this great favor of offering a position B, an assumption set configuration B, an alternative. you're dissatisfied with various aspects of the received view, that everybody seems to have a dumb, happy consensus for the received view, and you don't particularly like it, and you've become accustomed to reconcile to sort of nodding along with everybody else in this shallow consensus. Well, what you need is a real, true alternative, an independent alternative view that has a different basis of criteria of judgment and value system, a different reality tunnel. The drug policy reformers need to quit living in the establishment prohibitionist reality tunnel and set up a fully strong, clear, independent reality tunnel, which amounts to a different system of values and judgment criteria, and a different outlook on the motivations of people. The change won't happen through piecemeal political action. It all happens within the assumed backdrop of the establishment status quo and its manufactured consensus, shallow consensus. The revolution has got to happen by people instead. The revolution has got to happen by people instead living within and exemplifying an alternate way of thinking about things. If you're trying to do drug policy reform, but you don't bring to the table an alternate whole way of judging and thinking about things and following money and thinking about motivations and dissimulation, if you don't bring that to the table, then you have no chance. So drug policy reforms absolutely have to do that before you can even contemplate any specific political actions. The most political revolutionary thing you can do, like happened in early Christianity, was first of all change your thinking on a collective level. Change your thinking, not first through compromised political action, but rather first through changing the worldview that you operate from within which you operate. Formulate an independent, whole different way of talking about the issues and thinking about them. Be absolutely committed to bringing a truly alternate, disruptive, alternate worldview and system of valuation, and a truly alternate understanding, including history and what's norm, and understanding what was historically, statistically normal throughout religious history, being the use of drugs rather than non. That then gives you the proper basis on which you then do specific political actions. You see, the problem is that most people, they try to be political activists on specific issues, but they're operating from within the bad paradigm. So even all their activities in the field of reform are all contaminated and tainted by their facilitator of the oppressors. Accomplice, compromiser. Quit allowing yourself to be turned into an ally of the prohibitionists. Quit being a secret bedfellow of the prohibitionists. Quit affirming their worldview and manner of thinking. Think in a way that disrupts the prohibitionist story rather than condones and permits and encourages and sustains it. Quit sustaining and playing into and condoning the prohibitionist uber world model. It's more important to have a sound foundation for political activism than to have a mushy, compromised, inadequate foundation that's not actually independent and not actually critical, and then attempting to do reform on top of that. You'll never get anywhere. So step one is have a great foundation of a mental worldview that's truly critical, truly systemically critical and independent, and does not at all buy into any of the manufactured, shallow consent that is the establishment uber world model, which is, of course, designed to keep God from realizing himself. It's, of course, part of the satanic project, or in some sense, the Atman project, a project of avoiding, a massive project of avoiding transcendent experiencing and transcendent experience of knowledge. Meditation is harmful to the extent that it amounts to a way of avoiding transcendent and delaying, grappling with the issues of problematizing personal control power in relation to the ground of being. Kind of a tangible takeaway point on drug policy reform is to reject the value system. Totally, absolutely reject the value system. Don't be coerced into buying into the value system and the framework of judgment Now, you can sometimes play that game, but you have to be firmly operating on a firm foundation of independent thinking. That's independent, clear-headed thinking.